time to talk about money, and in particular, the vexed question, and it is for people, particularly of those of us who are moving on in years, and if you've got some money tucked away and you're getting next to nothing in term deposit returns and you're trying to stay above board, particularly for a self-funded retiree and you don't have the benefit of a pension to supplement your income, what do you do to try and stay, keep the head above water financially, but at the same time not take an inordinate risk with your money? Gary Stone is the director of Share Wealth Systems and may have some answers for you. Gary, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Chris. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, it can be a bit of a problem, and I've spoken to a number of people who are self-funded retirees who are just looking at their money sinking away in real terms with getting, you know, on substantial six-figure sums. You know, 2%, 3%, maybe 3.5% if they're lucky, if it's big money, and I'm talking close to $1 million. If you're getting much less, and most of us have got savings, there's a lot less than that, and we're lucky to get 2%. But then at the same time, being an old conservative dude with money, I look at shares and think, is that just like betting on the horses?
Unfortunately, a lot of people have that view of shares, and you know, I think the word gambling is used quite often by people to paint the picture of investing in the stock market. There's no doubt about that.
Alrighty, so can you allay some concerns? I'm one of those with those sorts of concerns. I look at the returns I get on some money that we've been able to put away, as I like to laughingly refer to as the hip replacement account, but over time, who knows what surgery you might need. That versus more conservative, lower yield investments. When you look at the shares, the phrase blue chip comes into play. I guess the banking shares and those kinds of shares. If people are looking to make the leap, at least with some of their funds, into share portfolios, how would they go about it, and where should they be putting their money?
Okay, great question. But let me just preface that first by saying that when people get to retirement, the number roughly to retire now with to have a comfortable retirement on about working on $60,000 a year. People have earned more than that in their lifetime and have a lifestyle that needs more than $60,000, and that obviously need more than this. But the number's around about $1 million, give or take, you know, $50,000 or $100,000.
Wow, so you need a capital base of $1 million.
$1 million, right. Oof. And that assumes that an inflation rate going forward of about 2.5%, which is in the band that you hear the Treasurer talk about, you know, between 2 and 3% is where they want to keep inflation. However, historically, over the last 40 years, inflation has actually been higher than that. So the numbers you were mentioning earlier about, you know, I think at the moment 1.8, 1.9, 2% in a fixed deposit account is pretty high. But historically, returns in fixed interest accounts have been higher than that. So that's inflation. So the point is you need to get more than inflation, which means that you need to have an element of growth in your lump sum that you retire with. Now to put that further into context, if you wanted to just achieve interest rate returns, i.e. flat with inflation, then you would need about $1.6 million to last about 22 years in retirement from when you retire, and that's for a couple. That's for a couple, not single. And the assumption is that your spouse is going to spend 70% of your retired time with you. So there's an inflation, roughly 1.65. Without any inflation, that's just leaving your money in the bank and getting enough to overcome inflation and drawing down on your lump sum. So there's a big difference.
And there's a lot of people, of course, who are drawing down, certainly, and they're drawing down into their capital because the returns are just not there. Can we just talk about, I suppose there's a number of options. You've got shares, and of course, while it's highly controversial at the moment, those who might have investment property, there seems to be increasing pressure, at the moment, for something to be done about some of the tax concessions that are available for people to possibly move into investment property. I know that the banks have been given directives, actually, to tighten up the criteria for lending for investment property. Is that starting, from your experience, Gary, to have an effect on that as an option for people to try and maintain some value with their assets going forward?
Well, the numbers that we just discussed in terms of lump sum that's required assume that a retired couple are not paying rent. That is, they own the house that they're in. Obviously, if you're renting, then your income is going to need to be higher than the comfortable amount that's mentioned.
Yeah.
So those assumptions aren't just mine. They're industry-wide. The Australian Super Fund Association uses those assumptions as well. So once you start fiddling with property, I mean, just small regularity changes, small law changes that governments make have a huge effect on a population. That's where you're talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people.
Mm.
So if they start playing around with negative gearing and all the other things that are around the law or the laws around investing in investment property, real estate property, then it's going to have an effect. There's no doubt about it. And you know, trying to model and predict the effect it's going to have and what a population does is very, very difficult. But things will change. There's no doubt about it. And typically we get what are called unintended paradoxes come out of this, where quite often the opposite happens to what the regulators thought would happen when they start fiddling with these things.
So it really comes down to that, and people can get caught out. I know with superannuation, it's an absolute nightmare. The rules keep tinkering, and I dare say when you talk about that for people who've got super funds, they'll probably have another lash at that sometime this year.
They probably will. In fact, I just thought of one point I didn't make when we mentioned the $1 million and the 2.5% assumed inflation going forward, is that $1 million assumes that people will get 5% growth per annum out of their lump sum. So that and you can't get 5% out of investing in fixed interest. And the place to go, you're either going to have to be invested in property, i.e. have an investment property in that lump sum that's getting you a yield via rental income to supplement, you know, to overcome the 2.5% inflation, or invest in the stock market. And you did ask, you know, what is the best avenue for investing in the stock market?
Yes.
And I think if people have never invested in the stock market and done the hard yards on learning about, you know, what stocks to select and not, then the best way to do that is through an index exchange traded fund.
All right, so if you were to talk to your financial advisor about the possibility of putting the money down to be involved with that, then I suppose it's sort of an arm's length situation almost, where you just basically have to trust these folks to invest in the right places.
Well, if you're going to invest via using an index exchange traded fund, then you wouldn't need to pay an investment advisor any additional fee to come up with that solution. What people should be trying to do is if they're paying an investment advisor, you know, 0.5% or 1% or 1.5% per annum to look after their money, then, you know, add that onto inflation. So if inflation is 2.5% and you're paying an investment 4%. Advisor 1%, you're getting to 3.5-4% is what's coming out of your nest egg.
So you've
got to minimise the fees. Yeah.
Can I just get you to rename that again in case we get any calls again? What sort of fund was it again?
It's an index exchange traded fund. So effectively, what an exchange traded fund does is it invests in the index. So it invests in the ASX 200 or the ASX 50 or the ASX 20.
And
there's even an ASX 300 as well.
It basically moves to buy and sell basically on the performance of that group of companies, essentially.
Correct. And not to sell, basically. So you'll get dividends from that and the ASX 200. So what the index exchange traded fund does is it just mimics the movement of the index. And here's the beautiful thing is it can never go to zero. Who's to know what's going to happen to some of our large cap stocks? There are large cap stocks that have been in the ASX 20 that are no longer in the ASX 20.
Alrighty. Well, it's always quite a difficult area, but you've given hopefully people some ideas to at least approach if they have advisors or family that advise them about possibly moving things around to improve their return and improve their quality of life in these later years. Gary Stone from Share Wealth Systems, thank you very much for your time again.
It's a pleasure, Chris.
Thank you. Bye-bye.